Hello, welcome to the Gaming and Marketing Podcast. I'm Jamin Warren, your host and founder of 256, a strategic consultancy that helps brands reach gamers as customers. Our clients' organizations often struggle with reaching this crucial audience with an authentic and natural voice that does not compromise the value of their brand. They want to find familiar customers in the world of gaming, but aren't sure where to start. We started this podcast to give you insight into why marketing to gamers is more important than ever. When you think of gamers, do you think of charity? You probably should. Since the explosion of live streaming video games, fans of their favorite streamers have raised tens of millions of dollars for causes they believe in. According to Twitch, the largest website for video game streaming, gamers have donated $145 million to charity since 2011, including $42 million last year alone. In a single 24-hour period, streamer Dr. Lupo raised over $2 million for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. So, how does it work exactly? Our guest this episode is Alyssa Sweetman, Diversity and Charity Program Manager at Twitch. She specializes in strategy and execution of influencer and live streaming charity fundraising, targeting millennials and Gen Z. Many charities still rely on mailers or cold calls to engage their audiences, but nonprofits and NGOs must evolve their strategy to target the next generation of digital consumers. Alyssa acts as the liaison to unite NGOs and nonprofits with live streaming content creators. Alyssa has helped lead some amazing activity in her role. When COVID first hit, she worked with brands like Verizon and PG&E to put together an amazing 12-hour event. She also helped to raise over $300,000 for the Trevor Project as well. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you tell me a little bit about like the role that community plays in your day-to-day, particularly like when you're advising, when you're talking to NGOs, nonprofits? Tell me a little bit about the role that online communities play in terms of impacting your day-to-day experience.
Pretty heavily. In fact, most nonprofits don't really understand what Twitch is. They just saw some random article about Dr. Lupo or Games Done Quick or GCX or some other random event where it got picked up by the news and they saw a large amount raised for a nonprofit. And they email and they say, we want that for us, without really understanding what it is they're asking for.
Right.
So really, community is at the core of everything I do, because I have to explain to the nonprofit, like, Twitch isn't the one handing out money. The community is activating around causes they're passionate about. So while I don't interact with the community on a day-to-day, everything they do and everything I work on them with translates into me helping nonprofits understand how they can activate within the community themselves and in a very organic and authentic way.
That's such a great point, thinking as if I was someone who is coming to the space for the first time, not being able to make that distinction between like Twitch as a like media and distribution platform and like where the dollars are actually coming from. Like, you know, if you look at, you know, old school like PBS telethons, like television is the medium by which you get to an audience, but unless PBS, you know, has people to call in, they can spend, you know, all day every day trying to do fundraisers, but if they don't have an audience of people who are willing to give money, then nothing will ultimately happen. That's a really interesting way. It seems like a unique communications challenge for you in terms of getting folks to understand like the distinction between Twitch as a platform versus Twitch users as an audience.
Yeah, it can be. Also, nonprofits will be like, well, how do I find very specific people in the community that care about my cause? And usually the answer is you can't. Some things people will like tweet about or talk about, but given that talking about like constant issues in the world is not, if that's not your brand as an influencer or an entertainer, it can be really draining on your audience and yourself. There's an emotional labor to talk about it. So I always just tell nonprofits, if they have a public email available, write a very short, I should not have to scroll at all to read the email. That's the other thing too, is that they send these massive, long explanations as if they're sending it to a PR firm at a company hoping to get in a boardroom, and the communication style is way different. So the very first step for nonprofits really wanting to activate in this space is to get on a fundraising platform made for influencers and live interaction. If you look at, you know, some platforms that have been around a really long time, and you go to the Wayback Machine on the internet and you look at their fundraising page 10 or 15 years ago and you look at their fundraising page today, they're identical. There's no change. There's no innovation. So the very first step is get on a platform, fundraising platform that has change, innovation, and is moving with the internet and the influencers on it. And then the second step is to communicate that you got on that platform. Most nonprofits, their base is 45 and up. And it's not because people under the age of 45 don't care. It's that they only market to people who are 45 and up.
Right,
it's really old
right.
school marketing.
Right.
There's no change. It's mailers, the cold calls. So the first thing I tell folks is, even if you don't believe there's a single person in your email list that knows what Twitch is or knows what TikTok is or anything, doesn't matter. Email your base. Add it to your newsletter. You can now fundraise for us on Twitch and TikTok and Facebook gaming. And here's how, with whatever platform it is.
So, you know, you pointed to the fact that, you know, a lot of nonprofits, what they see are these really big fundraisers, right? So, you know, the St. Jude's or, you know, the things that Dr. Lupo has done. And I was curious, like, how do streamers, like big streamers, how do they get interested in particular causes? Because I suspect that there's some element for nonprofits that are like, hey, I have a cause. I think, you know, this really popular streamer might be interested in my cause. How do those streamers end up deciding which things they want to do or deciding that they want to do a charity stream to raise money for a cause in the first place?
So I would say that for larger streamers, it's really about a cause that's passionate. Maybe it's a really unique pitch. In some cases, like brands who are not nonprofits can pay larger influencers on behalf of charities to do a fundraising event. That doesn't work if you're looking to create a relationship where you're going to get year over year fundraising or a really dedicated fundraising base. In fact, most people, when they first start, they come to me and they will, if they did do a little bit of research, what they do is they go to St. Jude's leaderboards and they email me and say, I would like to get in touch with these people. And it's just a copy and paste of the leaderboards from St. Jude. And I'm like, well, when you email them, they're going to know that you did that because you're going to start off by saying, I saw that you fundraised for St. Jude, and it's not creating a relationship. That's why I just say, if you see an email, an open DM, reach out. Make it a short, sweet message, who you are, what nonprofit you are, where they can fundraise for you, and offer to chat with them more if they'd like. And if they don't respond, that's okay. Nobody likes to say no to nonprofits. Nobody's going to be like, no, sick children? No way. I don't care about that. So when folks are like, I didn't get a response, it's like, well, maybe they just finished a fundraiser or maybe they're not interested, but they're not going to tell you no. They don't want an email out there that says, no, thanks, don't care. So it's a little bit of a balance, and not every nonprofit is going to have something super appealing. Some things can be really hard to wrap your mind around, like water insecurity. Most people in America have no idea what it's like not to have access to water.
Yeah.
Even in places where the water in their house is not great, they can buy bottled water. And so it can be really hard to wrap their minds around it. So I think just having appropriate expectations and focusing on building relationships with all sizes of influencers is really helpful, because the average fundraiser is between $500 and $2,000. And so your goal is to get, you know, 20 people to raise $500 for you now. And the next time you do a fundraising push in this space, get 50 people to do 500. And the more people get on board, the easier it'll have a snowball effect. Influencers will be like, oh, my friends fundraise for that nonprofit. I want to fundraise for them too. And I would say the good amount of fundraisers per year would probably be four, once a quarter.
Is there something unique about, you know, particularly game streaming platforms that make them well suited for charity drives?
I don't think it has anything to do with video games, to be honest. I think that it has everything to do with instant feedback loop. Chat is a place that you curate yourself, you moderate. You could be a super friendly, family-friendly place. You build up essentially a community around yourself. And the community that surrounds you wants to see you succeed. If you see maybe an influencer tweets that like their mic broke and so they won't be able to stream for a little bit until they save up, you might see someone respond and say, give me your Venmo. Because everybody who supports a creator, it wants to see them succeed. And when you do a fundraising event, it's not just the influencer or the streamer's goal, it's the community's goal.
What are some of the similarities that this might have to traditional fundraising techniques? You know, because I can see the many ways in which it's different, but what are some of the ways that might be similar for a nonprofit or connect to like their existing efforts?
It's the same kind of thing as setting up to have a run walk or a 5K where a person may ask their friends and family, but instead of their friends and family, it's the family that they chose or the friends that they chose, their community. Mm-hmm. So it's still crowdfunding in that kind of sense, but the people that are, you know, donating are a little bit more disconnected than your friends and family. So I would say that it's really similar more than anything. It's just looking at it through a different medium because it's entertainment. It's live on the internet. It kind of lasts forever. There's this idea that it's different. But in the same efforts that you put into a local chapter, building up relationships with folks so that you have a successful 5K, it's the same thing.
What do you think it is about like gaming audiences that make these like fundraising initiatives unique? Because I feel like the charity side of fundraising and gaming really goes against, you know, what is still a lingering public perception around like who gamers are and what they're interested in. And, you know, I think it's one of these things where I wish more people knew how much money, how many like millions of dollars game streamers have raised on behalf of like their favorite charitable causes. Because I think like gamers and video game culture still definitely has a negative association.
So if you look at generationally, starting with Gen X is kind of where it really started. People will spend a little bit more money on something they casually like, knowing it will do something good somewhere else. So with gaming, it's a hobby that maybe it got you out of depression or it got you through a rough time or, you know, during times of COVID, we can't leave our house. So it gives us something to do. And the idea that something fun and passionate means that we can also do something good is really amazing. And I think folks kind of look at gaming as this. I have a really hard time understanding what a gamer is. When I think of a gamer, I think of someone who lives in their mom's basement and the generic tropes.
Right.
And when I ask people, particularly in nonprofit rooms, if they've ever played Candy Crush or something else, and every hand goes up when they've played Words with Friends, Candy Crush, or Clash of Clans, I'm like, cool, you're all gamers. Congratulations. The idea that you can do something you love and do something that's good is pretty easy.
Yeah, that seems like a big, you know, we face the same thing, you know, in terms of like talking to clients, in terms of there's a disconnect between the size of the industry, you know, dollar signs, and then like a deeper, more nuanced understanding of gamers are not just one person. They have a variety of interests and motivations for why they're even involved in the space. It's not monolithic. What are some of the common misconceptions that you've seen around influencer marketing? And like, how do you navigate those on behalf of the folks that you work with?
I would say the biggest misconception is that you have to control what the influencer is doing for it to be okay within your brand. Mm-hmm. And one example is this one mental health nonprofit, when they first came into this space, asked me if they could require everyone who's fundraising for them to sit through a 2-hour training beforehand. And I said, do you make the people who do a run walk do right. that before they could start talking about it on social media? They're like, well, they're going to be entertaining and we don't want to look like this is an endorsement. I was like, it's not an endorsement if they're fundraising for you. Give them some guidelines. If they meet them, great. Then you can use it for marketing materials. If they don't meet them, cool. You still had someone fundraise for you and you didn't have to endorse them.
Right.
So there's a little bit of a complexity that folks tend to have understanding that when someone fundraises for them, they feel like it looks like an endorsement, even though it's not.
That is really, really unique. Like they are much more open to, you know, letting things happen organically in other fundraising methods. So it's just better just to think about it the same way you would your existing activities. Yeah, you don't have to put them on the website. Are there any like other pitfalls that you've seen in terms of like the partnership side between, you know, content creators, live streamers, and folks on the nonprofit side? Things that you would say like, this has gone south in the past. This is something that you should probably avoid.
For some reason, nonprofits really like the idea of creating their own Twitch page that has no following and then asking streamers to stream on it. And I'm like, there's no following base. They're like, but they'll bring theirs. And I'm like, you know, less than 20% of their community will follow them to a new site, to a new page. They'll be told 10 times that this person is going over to this other channel to do this event, but they will forget because they have notifications on for the channel where they watch their creator. And also there's a little bit of authenticity that the streamer kind of loses, or when they go to a site that's, or different channel because they are trying really hard to be professional. It is seen as part of their work portfolio when they do something on someone else's channel.
Right.
So they might not be as silly or as hyped up or whatever.
What do you think are some of the advantages for, you know, nonprofits and NGOs, like compared to like other commercial brands? Like, what are some of the distinct advantages that they might have that won't be available to, you know, a much larger Fortune 500 company that wants to do something on Twitch?
So recently there's been a little bit of a idea that the only way to be successful with influencers and fundraising with nonprofits is if the nonprofit pays the influencer. Mm-hmm. But I would actually say that the advantage is that you shouldn't be paying influencers if all you're doing is asking them to fundraise. If there's nothing additional that they're doing, you're just like, I would love for you to fundraise for us. Here's how you can do it. And they do it. There's no reason to pay them for that. They're voluntarily fundraising. It's the same as asking someone to join a run walk.
Right. Yeah. That's such a great distinction. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot about some of the work that you do.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. This podcast is produced by me and with help from Anthony Martinez and Lynn Raffel, with music by Lucene. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and colleagues and leave us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen. I'd also love to hear from you. You can find me, Jamin Warren, on Twitter at JAMINWAR. You can also find 256, that's spelled out, on Twitter at 256podcast.co, where you can sign up for our newsletter. Thanks so much and take care.